Our doctor is in, and so are the doctors of Capital Health. Welcome to the all-new Health 411. Every Sunday morning at 10, Dr. Jonathan Karp, along with our respected panel of guests from Capital Health, take you on an important medical journey to help you navigate your health and the healthcare system to reach your destination, good health. Health 411 is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.
107.7 The Bronx and 107.7TheBronx.com. Proudly nominated for National Association of Broadcasters Marconi Awards for Best College Radio Station for 5 consecutive years, as well as the winner of the 2023 IBS College Media Award for universities under 10,000 students. We are broadcasting from the Bronx All Digital Studios on the campus of Rider University in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. Welcome to Health 411. I am your host, Professor Jonathan Karp. This Health 411 program is presented by Capital Health. In Health 411, we discuss a variety of issues affecting health and wellness, public health, healthcare policy, and the healthcare industry, as well as the science of health and healthcare. Our goal is to expand your knowledge and your perspective on all things healthcare. Today, Marina Jean-Baptiste and I are joined in the studio by Kenneth Bevenor. Kenneth is the Director of Pharmacy at Capital Health Medical Center, and we welcome you to Health 411.
Hello. Good morning, Dr. Karp and Marina. It's nice to be here.
Excellent, and we're happy to have you here. You are the director of pharmacy, and I'm willing to bet when you were a college student, your goal wasn't to say, I want to be the director of pharmacy at a medical center in New Jersey. And so for students who might be listening, maybe you can tell us about your, you know, your career path towards that, like when you were a young adult, sort of starting out your educational journey.
Sure. So, you know, I grew up in a small country town outside of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and went to high school and was interested, obviously, in science and math. And I was sort of interested in the medical field, but I didn't want to go to school for many, many, many years to become a physician. So I was like, well, what could I do? And pharmacy somehow came up as an option, and I chose that path as a career. So I made my way down to Philadelphia and to the Philadelphia College of Pharmacy and Science, which recently has merged with St. Joe's. So now it's St. Joe's University, Philadelphia College of Pharmacy and Science. Pharmacy. I will stop there. It used to be pharmacy and
okay.
science.
Okay.
Now it's just pharmacy. But I did, I went to school to be a pharmacist. And really, I wasn't sure where I wanted to practice. Pharmacy is a great career because there's so many different opportunities that you can go into and different tracks. And when I graduated, go ahead.
I was going to say, I want to hear about that for some from our students who might be listening, because I think, and I wanted to track this on part of your journey, is a lot of people think, well, if I go to pharmacy school, I'm going to end up being a pill counter at, you know, CVS or Walgreens or one of those kinds of things. And your journey is, as far as, you know, your Capital Health, so you're not doing that anymore. But did you start out in behind the counter in that kind of place?
You know, interestingly, I have a quote I always say, I never worked a day of retail pharmacy in my life. Now, that's very different from a lot of people. And, you know, it's interesting, the public, probably not a whole lot of the public sector understands that there's a pharmacy department within a hospital. Because the most exposure you have to a pharmacist is at your local, you know, community pharmacy, you know, your CVS, your Rite Aid, or independent pharmacy. So that's where the public interacts mostly with pharmacists. But, you know, there's a whole infrastructure in a hospital of a pharmacy department, and we can go into those. And again, those are the different aspects when you become a pharmacist. You can work the retail setting. So in the retail setting, you have your chain pharmacies, CVS, Walgreens, Rite Aid. You have your independents that are privately owned and function just as well, your mom and pop stores that we call them. You can go into specialty pharmacy. There's nuclear pharmacy. There's the whole pharmaceutical industry, especially in this area in New Jersey, of all the manufacturers. You could work there as a pharmacist. There's academia. Obviously, there's professors and schools that need pharmacists as well. So there's a multitude of avenues that you could take with your pharmacy degree today.
Did you know that when you started out, or is that something you learned as your journey was progressing?
No, I'll be honest. When I first started pharmacy school, you know, it's the retail environment because that's what you see. In pharmacy school, I happened to get a job in a hospital. So as a student, I worked in a hospital in York, Pennsylvania. And I started my career in hospital pharmacy there. And that's where I really fell in love with the hospital career path of pharmacy, is I knew I wanted to work in a hospital. I didn't know to what capacity, because again, within the hospital environment, you can specialize in different areas. So at Capital, we have emergency department pharmacists. We have critical care pharmacists. We have infectious disease pharmacists. We have pharmacists who are our managers and run the departments. Well, you have a director in my state.
Let me ask you this, and I don't know this. What's different between a nuclear medicine pharmacist and an emergency medicine pharmacist? Like what distinguishes those sort of things?
So it's primarily the area in which you practice. So our emergency room pharmacists work in the emergency department with physicians and nurses in that area, taking care of those patients specifically. So they're more educated on, you know, dealing with trauma. You know, we're at level one trauma center at Trenton. So they see a lot of trauma. There could also be, you know, the criticality of people coming in with heart attacks and pulmonary embolisms and the special diagnoses that you see in that area. These pharmacists are trained in the appropriate medication management for those types of diagnoses, as opposed to an infection control pharmacist who works with our infection control practitioners, and they're more about, they do infections, whether it be from viruses or fungal infections or, you know, microbes that we treat with antibiotics. So depending on the focus of your practice within the hospital, you're involved in taking care of different types of patients.
And how about a pharmacist who's at the mom and pop store or one of the chains that you mentioned? Are they like generalists? Are they the GP of the pharmacy industry, so to speak?
That's a good description. And they do it all because they are in those areas. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not just that they're counting pills and putting them in a bottle. Those pharmacists are required to look at all the drug interactions, all the medications that those patients are taking. They want to assure that the physician has prescribed medications at an appropriate dose for what they're treating. You know, a fact not a lot of people know is that in the physician education, they may get one semester of pharmacology and focus on medications. Pharmacists get 4+ years. Strictly related to how medications work in the body, appropriate dosing, elimination, absorption, all those different things. So having the expertise of a pharmacist at your disposal as a physician is a huge advantage to make sure that they're taking care of their patients in the best possible way.
So part of the role then is as a physician would to consult like in the hospital with the pharmacist to help pick the appropriate medicines that they're going to prescribe. Oh, so that's what's
absolutely
happening. So the patient doesn't see that, right? The physician walks into the room or the office and says, I'm going to give you blah, 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 blah. But behind the scenes, he's talking to a pharmacist trying to figure out the best one. Is that what
you're
talking
absolutely about? And a lot of times we are on those rounds.
Oh, okay,
so
okay.
In the hospital, depending on if we have specialists who round with the physicians and the residents and the students, there are pharmacists on those teams that will go into a patient. So the patient sees a lot of white coats. They may not realize that one of them is a pharmacist, but in a lot of cases, there is a pharmacist on that team. Whether they're present or whether the physician then talks to them later, that's definitely something that happens every day.
Pretty cool. Okay, Marina's giving me the time signal. So we're going to take a break for some underwriting here at Health 411. We'll be right back to continue our conversation with Kenneth Bevnor. After some underwriting announcements, you're listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7TheBronx.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant, that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell, to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties, to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advanced Medicine.
107.7 The Bronc and 107.7thebronc.com. Welcome back to Health 411. We're continuing our conversation with Kevin Bevenor, the Director of Pharmacy at Capital Health Medical Center. In the last segment, we heard a little bit about the educational journey of Ken and the role of pharmacists in a hospital setting. I want to follow that up just a little bit for students who might be listening. It sounds like you went right from high school to pharmacy school. If Rider students are listening to this, they're obviously not at pharmacy school. They're hopefully going to complete their four-year degree. Is pharmacy school an option afterwards? Were you in a mix with some people who were at a high school, some people had finished a traditional four-year school or a two-year school when you were in your program?
So when I started pharmacy school back in the late 80s or mid-80s, there weren't as many pharmacy schools back then, and most of them were what you would consider direct admits. So you went there out of high school, and again, in the late 80s, pharmacy was a five-year degree program for a Bachelor of Science in Pharmacy. In 1996, the initial degree was changed to a PharmD, i.e. a Doctor of Pharmacy, and then at that point, the entry level became at a minimum a six-year program. And as the need obviously for pharmacists expanded, you had pharmacy schools crop up and new ones become eligible. The program shifted into, you can still go into a program that has a two-year pre-pharmacy program and then four years of professional, or you can do a four-year undergrad degree and then apply to a pharmacy school for those four professional years. And there are some schools that do one, there are some schools that do the other, and then there are some schools that do both. So today, if you were to go to pharmacy school, you would do at least 2 years of undergrad, sometimes four, and in the case of a school that doesn't have pharmacy like Rider, you go to a four-year, get an undergrad degree in biology or related major, and then apply to a pharmacy school and go 4 years. So the minimum you can go at this point for pharmacy is 6 years. A lot of folks go 4 and 4 for 8. And then post graduation, especially if you're going to work in a hospital setting, we now have pharmacy residency programs where it's a year of intensive hands-on practical skills and clinical skills that you develop and go through all the different areas of a hospital. And then when you finish that PGY1, you can either and then go into practice, or you could then specify and do a PGY2, postgraduate clinical year two, which would specify or point you more into an infectious disease, a critical care, an emergency, an oncology area. And then after that, then start your clinical practice post that.
So the pharmacy.
There's a lot of education. Yeah.
So the experts in whether it's emergency room, cardiovascular, whatever, those people have done that educational program. You describe that big long thing. In our first segment, one of the things you said, you chose pharmacy because you're laughing because you know what I'm going to say, is you didn't want to do all those years of school. What do you say now?
Well, pharmacy has turned into, you are the expert on medication. Mm-hmm. So, it has turned into a longer, academic profile to get to where you need to be. And, You know, again, as a youngster, you look at, oh, I don't want to go to school for, X number of years. As a professional now, when you're out practicing, that all makes sense that there's just so many medications and so much to learn about the way drugs, interact in the human body that's all necessary now in order to, again, maximize the effectiveness of medications in whatever disease state you're trying to treat. So, yes, it's a good point. I didn't look to go to school that many years. I ended up going six, so I did my 5-year pharmacy degree, and then I did do a PGY1 residency program prior to getting in here. And then I wasn't finished, and I went back and got my master's in business administration because I wanted more.
Yeah, and I'm just laughing because you chose it because I hear this. A lot of students say the same thing is, I'd love to go to medical school, but I don't want to spend all that time doing it. But if you find a career path for anyone who's listening, Marina, that you really like, it doesn't turn up feeling like a lot of time because you're doing stuff that you enjoy.
No, and
But
it's all important in the end game, because you want to get into a career that, again, you want that's a long time for a career when you graduate finally from college until you decide to retire. You have to like what you do.
And keep looking for new challenges. So, what are the characteristics that you saw that made people successful, either pharmacy students, pharmacy practitioners, or administrators in the world of pharmacy? What characteristics of somebody would you look for?
Well, I look for a combination of a people person and somebody obviously who's intelligent. And those two things together, they could be the descriptors for a lot of different career paths, but in pharmacy, again, you can be incredibly intelligent and know pharmacy, but the question is, how do you interact with people? And I mentioned before in the hospital, pharmacists have to interact with physicians and nurses. You have to be able to communicate in a positive way. You have to have, you're working with a team in that environment. So you definitely have to have a combination of, personality and people skills, and you have to have the technical acumen. When I hire people, I always one of the again one of the things I always tell people is I can teach someone a technical skill. If you have the basic pharmacy degree, I can teach you a technical skill. What I can't teach you is your personality. I can't teach you your work ethic. I can't teach you your beliefs. Those things you come into this position with. And so during my interview process, I try to focus on the non-clinical aspects of a person as opposed to the person. And what's nice in at Capital is when we do interview folks, we usually have a combination of clinical staff and me or management people, and I look for different things. And the clinical staff looks for different things. And then we come together afterwards and we try to determine what person fits that mold best between those two issues. So it is a combination. So it's not just, the clinical skills that you develop in school. It's your personality and how you treat people.
And sometimes undergraduates don't understand this. Nowhere did you say a person has to love chemistry, biochemistry, medicinal chemistry, or all the different kind of courses, that undergraduate institutions. And you're nodding because you don't have to be in love with that subject matter. It's being able how to use it and apply it. And being a good person means a lot, Marina. That's an important thing. But it seems to me, like you mentioned, you went and got an MBA on your journey. So at some point, you said you did not want to be the medicine guy, right? You wanted to migrate your career another direction. What drove you in that way?
So, it's interesting. I was getting back to my educational journey. And so I graduated pharmacy school. And I'll be honest, when I graduated, my first question was, is that it? I mean, that's all you're going to teach me? I didn't feel prepared to go start a career. And of course, the pharmacy boards, you take the pharmacy boards similar to medical boards in order to be able to practice. And I did that. And then, I fortunately had some professors at Philadelphia College of Pharmacy that sort of directed me. They knew I wanted to work in hospital pharmacy, and they sort of directed me to the pharmacy residency option. And back in 1987, when I graduated, there were only about 100 residency programs in the country. Today, there are more than 100 residents in New Jersey. Wow. So it's completely expanded. And I was fortunate to be able to do that. And I did my PGY1 out at Hershey Medical Center in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And during that year, I determined that I wanted to focus on the people side of things and become a manager within running a pharmacy. And so at that time, what was convenient was I was able to then go back to school at Penn State as a Hershey Penn State employee and start my MBA
nice.
Program.
Yeah. And I want to hear a little bit about your movement to the dark side, but we have to take a break for some underwriting announcements. We'll be right back on Health 411. You're listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7 The Bronx.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health. There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com. You're listening to Health 411. I'm Professor Jonathan Karp. I am here with Marina Jean Baptiste, and we are continuing our conversation with the Director of Pharmacy at Capital Health Medical Center, Kenneth Bevenor. And we're hearing about his journey. In the last segment, I joked it was to the dark side because you go into the profession of pharmacy because you want to, you know, work with people, you want to be involved with drugs and the treatment care, but then you move to administration. And like, what does a pharmacy administrator do in a hospital? What does that career look like?
Oh, it's a piece of cake. You know, you say the dark side. So, you know, one of the nice things, you know, of doing, again, this is one of the exciting things about pharmacy is you can go into different areas. And I've gone into the management/administration role. I still need to have that clinical background. Because in this role, I'm responsible for, you know, people say, well, what do you do as the director of pharmacy? Well, I'm responsible basically for every medication in both hospitals, in both of our satellite emergency departments, in all of our offsite clinics, in our 60 plus physician practice sites. All those medications ultimately are under my responsibility.
When you say under your responsibility, does that mean to make sure that the medicines are there to be prescribed or some other, like, what does that, under your responsibility, what does that mean?
So basically it means a couple things. So first, from a medication management perspective, it means the acquisition, the control, the dosing, the admixing, if we need to admix, and then the disposal of all medications.
Oh, that's right.
In addition to that, it's to assure that all those medications are used safely. So patient safety is a huge responsibility in all those features. It's, you know, we, and so then from a budget perspective.
There's more than just the drug aspect of it. It's the education to everybody down the chain of command. You're educating people, laws change, new medicines are invented and marketed. Old ones sometimes come up with new side effects and new interactions that are negative. And you're nodding. Does that mean so part of what you're doing is you're still involved with us? You have to stay sort of current. You have to stay up to date.
We obviously have to stay up to date because the medications that are produced by manufacturers eventually get put on formulary. We need to educate the providers now that they are available, how to dose them, where to use them. You know, as part of, you know, we have graduate medical education at Capital Health. Pharmacy is part of the education of those medical students on the on all different types of medication. So the again, I need to know, obviously, the new technology coming out related to what we do in the hospital pharmacy. You know, we could talk for 3 hours on everything that, you know, we do in the hospital. But, you know, the dark side, you know, it's taken all that responsibility. And, you know, it's, you know, the department here, we probably have a budget, a drug budget of about $75 million a year. And that's a lot more than a lot of mid-sized companies. And that's just one part of the entire institution. But that's a lot of responsibility from a resource stewardship perspective to make sure that those drugs are being utilized appropriately and cost effectively. So the new drugs come out, they're obviously the more expensive. They are more expensive than our current drugs. Does that mean that the current drugs or the old time drugs don't work? No, of course not. They still work as well. And you have to do a clinical analysis of whether these new drugs justify that additional cost. Now, a lot of times newer drugs have a better safety profile. So yes, it may cost more to use those drugs, but are they safer? And if they are, you know, we look at that as an advantage and try to be on the safe side of using medications. So it's a challenge both ways.
How often does a conversation happen with a physician where the physician has been doing something like prescribing a drug for a certain amount of time or has a certain, and then it, like something new comes out or something? Do you have to have those conversations with physicians and say, no, this one is better? Is that a battle, or are most physicians willing to hear that?
I wouldn't say it's a battle, but it's a passionate discussion.
spoken like a true administrator.
and they talk and they happen every month.
Okay.
So I would, you know, we have a pharmacy and therapeutics committee that evaluates new drugs. So we get applications to that formulary probably every month. And then we do an analysis of that drug compared to what we have. And we have discussions then with the physician leaders on in that particular subspecialty and talk about the advantages and disadvantages about what we have currently and how this new drug would have an advantage in our treatment arsenal. So they happen all the time.
Pretty cool. And so that's a little bit of managing internal personalities and internal politics in the hospital. Does a director of pharmacy play any role in sort of the state and federal politics of insurance, like which medicines are going to be covered by insurance, Medicare? You know, now Medicare costs can be negotiated. I mean, you're not. Can you tell us what the role of a director of a pharmacy might be in some of those things?
Well, we try to. And their pharmacy is probably one of the more highly regulated professions out there. We're managed by the State Board of Pharmacy. Each state has individual laws and regulations for that state, so it's not like a federal basis. They're very similar, but there are differences with each state. Pharmacists are licensed by state, meaning I have a license in New Jersey and I have a license in Pennsylvania, so I can practice in either. If I move to Maryland and I want to practice pharmacy in Maryland, I have to reciprocate a license into Maryland. I have to take their law exam and then get approval to work in Maryland. So it's not like I can go from state to state. The only exception to that is if you work in the Veterans Administration hospital network.
Interesting. Like you move
they do allow you to go from state to state without having individual licenses. But for most of us, that's not the case. So we work with our state organization, the New Jersey Society of Health System Pharmacy, and try to regulate when we can. Reimbursement is a big issue. One of the things we're battling right now is the fact that, you know, pharmacists pretty much across the country, although some states are breaking through finally, in that giving pharmacist provider status. And what that means is that we can bill for our services. And right now that's a disadvantage we have with physicians, with chiropractors, nurse practitioners, PA. Right. They can all bill for their services. Mm-hmm. Pharmacists cannot. And that's a huge disadvantage we have right now. And so that's one of the goals that we're working on moving forward.
And, that kind of change, would that have to happen at the state level or at the federal level to allow that kind of thing to happen?
Ideally, if it happened at the federal level, that would be great.
Okay.
But the way it's been working recently is it's been working at the state level, and then specifically not across all provider status. And I know we're getting into the weeds here, but it's like, so Medicare is the primary one. So if you get provider status with Medicare, then a lot of other private insurers will jump on that boat. So really, we're trying right now at the state level to influence Medicare and get that provider status, and then that hopefully that would expand to independent insurances. Cool. and give us a lot more opportunities.
And being a potential patient, how would that benefit the patient?
So right now, pharmacists do a pharmacy review of everything that you're on, and we look for interactions, and we will make recommendations. Well, you shouldn't be on this if you're on this, and this dose may not work for you. And we do that right now under the auspices of an ambulatory care clinic or practice, but we can't really bill for that. So by allowing pharmacist provider status, it would expand that option to patients where they don't get it today, because nobody can do it if there's no reimbursement.
Oh, so would it be under the umbrella of the movement to more personalized medicine?
Absolutely.
So every patient would have a pharmacist consultant on the team to sort of okay.
And again, some of that happens now in unique situations, but the reason it's not more widespread is because there's a lack of reimbursement for that service.
Pretty good.
It's like anything else. I mean, you know, it's not like that's the reason we do our job. We do our job because we want to make sure patients are on the right medications. But at some point, you know, we all can't be, you know, completely good Samaritans and not have some kind of income from that perspective.
Absolutely. Excellent. Good point. This is the end of this segment, but hold that thought, Ken, because I want to continue. We'll be right back on Health 411 after these underwriting announcements. You're listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advanced Medicine.
107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com. Welcome back to Health 411. We're recording from the Digital Bronx Studios at Rider University, and we're continuing talking to Kenneth Bevenor, the Director of Pharmacy at Capital Health. We welcome you to listen in our conversation. Ken mentioned he's been doing this for a while, and one question that comes up from that, what was the role of a pharmacist or a director of pharmacy during COVID? What did that look like?
Well, it was obviously it was an interesting time for everyone. But when the vaccines, well, first of all, when COVID hit, the first issue that pharmacy had, and again, all these patients were being treated in hospitals and hospitals were overrun, is we were in dire need of certain medications, and we ran into shortages. And again, the director of pharmacy was responsible for trying to assure the acquisition of all those medications we needed to treat the patients. Then as the therapeutic options became available, the monoclonal antibodies, again, the state set up a mechanism to distribute them to hospitals. And who was the point person at the hospitals who were responsible for that connection with the federal government and the state government to assure the appropriate utilization of those therapies? It ended up being the director of pharmacy. And then once the vaccines came out, and hospitals set up these large community vaccination clinics, who's the person that was responsible for setting them up and being the point person? Was your director of pharmacy? So it shows shows the responsibility network of that role within the hospitals, that they were given huge responsibilities to coordinate the acquisition of vaccine and then set up these basically community vaccination clinics in their communities to assure that as many people got vaccinated as possible. And that's the role of the director of pharmacy. We wear many hats. We interact with many different departments and have the expertise of running, you know, these departments within the hospital that correlates well with setting up these programs that people need. You know, they need somebody that can control the drug acquisition and the medication management, that looks at reimbursement and charging, that are great at doing record keeping, that have a personality that can interact with the folks from the state, which is sometimes challenging. but it's that personality too that allows them to do all these things. So again, so when they looked for somebody to run these, who'd they turn to? And in most cases it was the director of pharmacy for the hospital that ran these programs.
Oh, very interesting.
And it's a great example of the flexibility and the dearth of responsibility that we have within the institutions.
Well, let me expand the question a little bit. That's sort of in the world of COVID, but you've been doing this long enough that you were in the world of pharmacy before the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and now after. Has the role changed?
The role, I don't think the role itself has changed. We are focused today on different things. You know, as you have ebbs and flows through years of things. Like today, I can tell you when I first started my career as a director of pharmacy, drug shortages were not anything that was on my radar. I wouldn't even think about drug shortages.
Interesting. Okay.
Today, it's probably my number one stressor is being able to acquire medications to take care of patients. And again, it's not just the new drugs. It's the old drugs that are now generic. And as I mentioned before, you know, healthcare is it's a business. I used to have a CEO at a place I used to work that his mantra was, you know, no margin, no mission. you know, you've got to have a margin in order to keep the hospital in business. Right. And you know, it comes down to, are you able to supply drugs? And the pharmaceutical companies are sort of in the same boat where you have drugs that have been out for a while, they lose their patent status, so now they're generic. And our goal is to try to drive those prices down to as low as we can, because again, reimbursement in the hospital field is not great. So we're trying to push those prices down, and it gets to the point that a manufacturer of a generic drug says, you know what, I can't make anything on a generic drug, I'm going to stop making it.
Yeah.
And in general, you usually have a couple manufacturers that produce a certain medication for the entire country and sometimes globally. And then when you have one manufacturer who decides, you know what, we're going to stop making this because we can't return a revenue, now you get into a shortage problem because the other player or players can't supply the market enough to have the drug. And then we get into the issues of not being able to get drugs. And so that's just a battle today that we didn't face 20 years ago.
So is part of that working with, I don't know, epidemiologists or public health officials to sort of track disease demands of what is going to be needed?
It's a lot of times it's hard to predict that. And again, from an inventory perspective, you know, when we had COVID and even before COVID, you know, I can tell you about, you know, different things where you try to amp up your inventory based on an event that you might see. Mm-hmm. So on the East Coast here, I mean, if we see a huge snowstorm, we try to increase inventory because our ability to get replacement drug may be impacted by snow or the ability to do that. But it's hard to keep a disaster inventory on stock because, again, with drugs, that's a big dollar not that you have to carry.
Now,
so
is the shelf life of the medicines standardized? I mean, or does every medicine come with its own shelf life?
Like it does,
I can't hoard apples and fill my entire refrigerator with apples. You know,
generally medications have a 1 to 2 year shelf life.
Okay.
So it's not short, but it gives you an opportunity to turn it over. But it's, you know, and again, nobody saw COVID coming. There's no way you can prepare for that. So it's more or less more acute things that happen, hurricanes, weather issues. You know, I happened to work in South Jersey when the Pope was coming to Philadelphia. You wouldn't believe all the planning we did because the Pope was coming. And what that did was it was going to restrict the access, the road access to certain roadways for us to get medication.
Oh, really? I would never even have thought of that.
and also access to transfer patients back and forth between hospitals. You know, again, in South Jersey, your major medical locations like Penn and Jefferson are in the city, and the South Jersey hospitals feed them a lot. Well, we couldn't get patients across the bridges because people were walking from New Jersey to Philadelphia to see the Pope, and they were closed to traffic.
Yeah,
so,
interesting.
You know, you try to look at as much of that as you can and do the planning, but it's difficult to do a lot of that.
Yeah. So who knew you'd have to learn about logistics when you were in pharmacy
school?
Again,
you have to learn about everything in this role.
That's pretty cool. So we have about a minute left, Ken. So if our listener, am I forgetting to say something, or is there something that you want to tell our listeners about pharmacy in a medical center setting or careers? Do you have advice for anybody? I'll turn it over to you and see if there's anything that you want to get across.
Now, again, pharmacy, it's a great career. You have a lot of different options, you know, to work, whether it's in retail pharmacy, in hospital pharmacy. Again, I had classmates who worked at Rite Aid for 33 years and loved their job. So I chose a different path in hospital. Doesn't mean that retail's not a way to go. Retail's very productive as well. And, you know, there's a lot of pharmacist-patient relationships in that community setting that work out fine too. So it's just, you know, what you decide you want to do. Again, I mean, in my case, I decided to sort of step away from the clinical side and go into management. We need managers in the pharmacy practice as well. But it gives you an opportunity to do a lot of different things. I'll finish with my final mantra, and everybody who works with me knows this. My mantra is work hard and be nice to people.
Yeah, again, those interpersonal skills have come up over and over and over again in what you're seeing. And it's, you know, I think some of our science nerd students sort of forget that. They think it's all about, you know, some, you know, performance on a test, and they forget being able to work with people is a really important part of a career.
No, it is. Yeah. It is. You can't be you have to be multidimensional in whatever you decide to do.
So cool, Ken. Kenneth Bevenor, the director of pharmacy at CapHealth, thank you for joining us. This has been a great conversation. This is 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com. We're recording live from the Digital Bronx Studios. Thank you for listening. This program is part of Capital Health and Rider University's efforts to bring people together to address careers and issues associated with all aspects of health and healthcare. I want to thank Kenneth Bevenor, again, director of pharmacy at Capital Health. Thank you, Ken. You've been a great guest. We hope today's conversation has given you things to think about, not just about Ken, but about careers in pharmacy, especially in a medical center setting. If you have questions and or comments about this program or want to make suggestions for future broadcasts, please email us at health411@rider.edu.
Remember, you have a doctor's appointment scheduled for every Sunday at 10 a.m. Don't miss the all-new Health 411 with Dr. Jonathan Karp and our expert medical guest from Capital Health. You can listen to Health 411 anytime on demand. Go to 1077thebronx.com/health411. To listen to past episodes, or tune in every Thursday at 9 a.m. to hear the weekend rewind edition of Health 411. Health 411 on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.